From the Autoline Studios, here is your host, John McElroy.
Thanks for joining us on Autoline this week, where the discussion is all about engines. Automakers are knocking their brains out, trying to come out with better engines that get better fuel economy, fewer emissions, but still are affordable for most people. Ward's Auto World has been testing engines for 21 years now and awarding their 10 best list. And I've got three of the editors on the magazine with us right now, starting with the editor-in-chief, Drew Winter, Christy Schweinsberg, and Tom Murphy. I want to thank you all for coming on and explaining what the 10 best is all about for 2015. And Drew, you're the editor-in-chief. What really stood out in this year's competition?
Well, I think the main thing was this is the most diverse list of engines we've ever tested. We've got everything from a hydrogen-powered fuel cell Hyundai to the Chrysler Hellcat, which is, you know, just a crazy muscle car, and then everything in between with three-cylinder. We have 2 3-cylinder engines on the list. We've got, the staple 4-cylinder turbos, and just a bunch of other things in between, some really interesting EVs and extended-range EVs, the whole menu of interesting engines this year.
That is quite the mix. Christy, did you guys pick up on any trends or things that you think are really worth pointing out?
Well, certainly the turbo 4 trend continues, and probably this is the most
we had 15, turbo 4s. We had 15 4-cylinder turbos out of 37 engines evaluated, 15 of them.
37 engines?
Yeah.
That's a lot of testing.
That's 27 all new or improved, plus the 10 from last year.
And Tom, how do you go through your evaluation? How do you whittle down that list of 37 to the top 10?
It's a scoring process. We start by getting the vehicles in the office. We have them in Southfield, Michigan, October and November. So we have all 8 editors at Ward's who are driving the vehicles and then doing score sheets on every one of them. So scoring horsepower and torque and NVH and technology, of course, we're taking that into account, and observed fuel economy. And then once we have those scores, that's the leaping off point of our arguments and our debates about which ones belong on and which ones don't.
So you have all these spreadsheets that show the size, the power, the fuel economy, all that sort of
torque
thing.
Torque charts, compression ratios, bore and stroke, we look at all of it.
So Christy, walk me through a little bit. You get in a car, you start it up. What are you trying to evaluate as you drive these things?
Torque off the line, you know, where does the peak torque come in? Typically we prefer, you know, a good amount of mid-range torque, or at least I do. And then we zero the trip computer, and we observe fuel economy. And Tom was even calculating the old-fashioned way this year just to make sure that computer was telling
us the
truth.
For a couple of them.
Yeah. We're listening for noise. Is the noise excessive, or is it appropriate for the application? You know, certainly with a Hellcat, you're not going to judge it too harshly for noise, because that's part of the fun, right? Vibration. There were some vehicles I drove this year that I thought had uncharacteristic amounts of vibration. You know, when you're holding the steering wheel and it's just constantly jittery. And yes, the technology, you know, is a fuel cell vehicle worth extra points? Is a 6.2 liter V8 worth extra points, you know, those types of things.
Drew, how do you keep that straight in your mind? I mean, to go from a 707 horsepower Hellcat V8 to a fuel cell car, I mean, how do you keep that separate in your mind in terms of trying to evaluate which do I think is really better?
Well, you know, it's because we do it. I mean, Tom's really the expert at explaining this, but we look at each in its class or where it relates to other similar vehicles, not necessarily directly comparing one to another. So that's why we get a list with a good variety of 10 best engines, and we're not an enthusiast list. We're not a green list. We're trying to really look at engineering achievement, and also with things like fuel economy and efficiency and all the targets that engineers have to meet. So there's a lot of things that go into it. But we've been doing this for so long, and we all love it so much. It's not that hard.
Is it that? Really not that hard.
Right.
I come back to the Hellcat versus the fuel cell.
He's right. You know, you get into a rhythm at this time of year, all of us do, where we just know we're going to have to spend a lot of time in cars and really pay close attention to a lot of things. And you got to do your score sheets pretty quickly after you drive the car, otherwise you forget. And you just get into this rhythm of gathering all this information. And eventually, you know, the best engines do rise to the top. It's just kind of fun.
Okay.
I think really if we had the awards 15 best engines, it'd probably be pretty easy to do every year. But it's really, I think, about the last five that really, that's when people really start to get angry and feelings get hurt when people don't think their engines are so great. And that's
there's only 10 spots.
Yeah.
Well, to use a bad pun, let's bore into some of those engines. And let's start with those three cylinders. Talk about those. That's so interesting.
Two of them at kind of opposite ends of the spectrum. One was the Fiesta with that three-cylinder EcoBoost.
The Ford Fiesta.
Yeah, Ford Fiesta. And then also the Mini Cooper with a three-cylinder. Quite a bit more horsepower and torque in the Mini. That's a 1.5 liter versus a 1 liter in the Fiesta. The fuel economy was outstanding in the Fiesta. And in the Mini, you get this driving enjoyment. One of the editors said, if I was buying a Mini, I would pick no other engine but this one. Why would I need anything bigger?
And that's the base engine.
It's the base engine, and 30 miles per gallon is easy. You know, you can really kind of feather it and do much better than that. So the fuel economy is even better in the Fiesta. It's interesting to have three cylinder engines on our list. I mean, I wasn't sure I'd ever see the day, but
especially in the United States. I mean, I can see in other markets around the world where they first started, but to see them in the U.S. market is truly an inflection point, as they say. But Christy, you were talking about some engines that had a lot of vibration to them. Was that the three-cylinder ones?
No, actually not. No, I won't name names. But
okay.
No, actually, there were some that were more in the luxury realm.
No kidding, because a three-cylinder, you'd expect to be inherently unbalanced. Mm-hmm. So they must have balance shafts in those things to
straighten them. The BMW, the Mini does have balance shafts, but really one of the things that impressed me about the Ford EcoBoost is it does not have balance shafts, because that would have added too much cost. And so they came up with a very innovative strategy to counteract this inherent rocking motion that you get in three-cylinder engines. And so that they saved cost and they improved fuel economy because they got rid of some reciprocating parts and everything. So it was it really a cheap entry-level engine, but represents a huge amount of engineering and a lot of accomplishment. It was cool.
What kind of fuel economy did you get? Because I've heard some people getting 40 miles per gallon with the three-cylinder in the Fiesta.
In the Fiesta, 38 miles per gallon was easy.
For a non-hybrid car, that's a pretty good number.
Yeah, and a five-speed manual and us beating it to death, really. Yeah. I mean, it was...
With the Mini, it was closer to 30, 31.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And those are combined numbers that you're talking about.
Those were our numbers, so every driver is driving a different cycle. You know, some, like Christy and I live close to our office, so there's no highway driving. Other people have a longer commute, so they're more likely to see a better fuel economy number. But every car is going to have a different driving cycle. Sometimes a car is going to get driven out to a press event in Ann Arbor or something. That's a good chance to wind up your fuel economy numbers. And some vehicles don't. And sometimes the loan, you know, the time of the loan can be a factor. We had the Corvette in really bad weather. So people were a little reluctant about, you know, how much do I want to drive this when it's, you know, when it's snowy and icy out.
Weren't a lot of burnouts then.
Not a lot of burnouts, but it made the list.
So many turbo four-cylinder engines, and they're all pretty good in my book. Yeah. How do you guys slice this up to pick the best of them?
For us, it came down to fuel economy. I mean, there's a lot of good ones out there. But for us, the Volvo S60, the T5 version, that's only the turbocharged version. They also have a T6, which is turbo and supercharged, more horsepower, more torque, lots of fun to drive, but we found that the fuel economy wasn't as good, and we thought the T5 performance was outstanding. So we really liked, you know, the idea of getting 30, 31 miles per gallon in a 2-liter turbo luxury car. So that stood out. The Subaru WRX, 2-liter turbo boxer, excellent fuel economy, 27, 28 miles per gallon, once again, with, 268 horsepower. And then the third Turbo 4 was the Volkswagen Golf, the 1.8 liter TSI. We also tested, of course, the Audi S3, which has the 2 liter version of that engine, making 300 horsepower or close to it. And then the Volkswagen GTI, which is also a 2 liter turbo, same engine family.
Mini turbo, and then we had the
Mini Cooper turbo. S, yeah, 2 liter turbo. But, you know, we like the Volkswagen because the price is right and the fuel economy is outstanding. Again, you know, 31, 32 miles per gallon, you know, from an engine that is really composed at all levels. You know, if you're going wide open throttle or just sitting at idle at a stoplight, you know, the engine is just doing its job.
Christy, where do you see the trend going? I mean, the U.S. market used to be V8 dominated. Mm-hmm. That's gone away, not gone away, but now V6s dominate. Are these turbo fours going to become the norm?
Well, with CAFE regulations being what they are, you know, and ramping up to be even stricter, I think, yes, you know, you'll still have V6s and V8s out there, but I think they're not going to be as prevalent as they used to be, and you're going to see more electrification and certainly more fuel cells because of CARB, California Resources Board, and the states that follow the CARB rules.
Okay, so automakers are doing this because regulations are forcing them. Will consumers warm up to these turbo four engines like they have to V6s or even V8s?
I think that's a done deal. I mean, if you look at the model mix now. And a lot of luxury manufacturers now on their entry-level vehicles, whether you're talking Audi, Mercedes,
BMW,
they all offer four-cylinder turbos that are great. I think this has already happened. I mean, the number of six cylinders we're seeing really are more on the high luxury side, where again in the luxury makes where they're very high output engines and replacing really V8 replacements. And now we're seeing, you know, all these great turbo fours, and now the turbo threes are sneaking in on their territory. So we just keep going smaller and smaller.
That's a real trend that I noticed this year. In fact, I wrote a story about it because it became really stark and apparent to me. I was disappointed with the disappearance of the naturally aspirated six cylinder engine. You know, think back 10 years ago in our competition. You know, the Nissan VQ, the 3 liter, and then the 3.5 V6. The Honda Accord 3.5-liter, Toyota with the Lexus 3.5, Cadillac with the 3.6-liter V6. I mean, all those engines are still in production and they're good engines, but they haven't been updated. You know, most of the market has kind of ignored the naturally aspirated six cylinders to do things like a 2-liter turbo that can deliver the same fuel economy, or that can deliver the same power, in some cases more power, and still hopefully getting similar or better fuel economy.
How about hybrids? Any hybrids make the list this year?
Well, it depends on if you define the BMW i3 as a hybrid, because it's a battery electric with an extended range
generator,
two cylinder. But because it offers that option, that's one of the reasons why we put it on our list. It's a very compelling electric vehicle all by itself. We found that the acceleration was extremely linear, and unlike some of the other electrics, by my opinion, I thought they kind of ran out of power, you know, in the higher part of the power band. But
all torque, no horsepower, so to speak.
But with the i3, I felt like there was so much more pull, you know, at higher speeds, at higher RPM. So no other hybrids, but you know, the extended range i3 is on there, and we really like the i3 because, you know, it doesn't come across as a compliance car. It's not just for California or the Northeast. It is baked into their entire product portfolio. It's available at 280 out of 330 some showrooms around the United States. So BMW is doing this because they think this can still be a fun way to drive, get the BMW driving experience, and, you know, also be zero emission.
Well, and I like it because we test a lot of electric cars now, and they do start to seem alike when you just have the same basic components of the electric engines and whatnot. And I think the ones that won this year really stood out. Again, they had personality. The i3 stands out as something that it's a whole new look at personal transportation there. I mean, it's an aspirational vehicle for for people who I think who don't even like cars. You know, I mean, it's really cool. It's interesting. It's just a different look at everything. And then we had the fuel cell Hyundai, which is just off the charts. I mean, well, you and I go back. I never thought we'd have a fuel cell powered car on our 10 best engine list, and this really stands out. It's the jump in technology that we've seen in the past 10 or 15 years is just incredible.
But, you know, this fuel cell thing is still kind of an experiment, even though they are leasing them.
Yeah.
The numbers are minuscule, minuscule,
absolutely,
minuscule. These things, I know, don't you guys have a dollar cutoff?
Yeah.
You
don't $60,000 base price.
$60,000. Yeah. I can assure you that Hyundai fuel cell car is probably $150,000
car. We can assure you that some of the electric cars are in the same boat that we've tested, you know. So, I mean, we have to sort of, okay, this is the stated price. This is the pricing that a consumer, that they're selling them to consumers. And, you know, I mean, in order to really keep furthering technology and evaluating stuff. I mean, we have to basically say, okay, these are some of the basic criteria, and it falls under the criteria. I mean, it's technically priced at about $50,000-$60,000 under our price cap.
It was $50,000 on the sticker. We know that Hyundai's taken a bath on it. That's a given, but we really do want to recognize their achievement. I mean, this is like a moonshot. And driving the car, and this is a Tucson, a five-passenger CUV that is, you know, everybody's buying mid-size CUVs, and this car just drives like a basic car. You can't, I mean, there's no funky displays or anything. There's a speedometer and there's a fuel gauge, and, you know, braking and acceleration feels just like a regular gas engine.
Did you get enough of a test drive where you had to go fill the tank?
Yeah, it started out with 265 miles of range. So we had, you know, I mean, we had a good amount of driving in that. And then, you know, after the refills of, 5,000 PSI rather than 10,000, we got, but the standard consumer is going to get, you know, close to 300 miles range on the thing. And it's just an absolute spaceship inside, but you never know it. You lift up the hood, an average person wouldn't even see anything unnatural there. You could put anybody in the car and drive it. It's really quiet. And it's just, it's really, I think, just surprised us all. And as far as the infrastructure issue, I mean, we discussed it, but the fact is, you know, it's a chicken and egg thing. And look, they're doing the part. Now, automakers are making really credible vehicles. The infrastructure has to get there. And, you know, by the way, we've done this with the electric light bulb, with cell phones, regular phones. I mean, a lot of other times when the product is good enough, the infrastructure gets developed.
You can say the same thing about just plain battery electrics. There's a lot of them available, but I just ran some numbers at Ward's Auto, and 0.4% of the, you know, of the sales through the first 10, 11 months of the year are battery electric vehicles.
So, they're doing better than hybrids did in the beginning.
True.
Their sales are growing faster.
Yes, they are.
There's no question about that.
A tiny base.
Well, as Tom said, a fraction of a percent of sales are electrics. Christy, let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum. You guys have mentioned the Hellcat V8 a couple of times. I'm sure there's some other high-performance engines that were on the list as well.
Well, we had the Corvette V8. I'm really the wrong person to ask about V8s because I like them. I enjoy them.
She's a Volt owner.
I'm a Volt owner, and I do prefer the greener side of
Go back. What was your take on the fuel cell car?
Oh, I enjoyed it very much, and I also had the opportunity to drive the Toyota Mirai recently, which was not in the competition because it doesn't come out until next year. So I did have that comparison to give
Had some feedback,
and I found the Tucson fuel cell much, much quieter, less like a science experiment than perhaps the Mirai. In the Mirai, you sit on top of the fuel cell stack, and in the Tucson fuel cell, it's in the cargo area.
Well, they've got the actual tank is in the back underneath the cargo area, and then the stack and everything is under the hood, like an engine. Yeah.
And there's a battery underneath, the passenger seat.
And presumably, the Mirai, the Toyota fuel cell car, will be better when it does reach the showroom. But what I'm curious about is I've driven earlier fuel cell cars, and while quiet, they can make buzzes and there's fan noises. Did you hear that sort of thing?
Not in the Tucson. No, yeah. It was remarkably quiet, and I understand it's a very difficult thing to do. So that was another thing that pushed us toward awarding them.
So suddenly, you start to realize the only noise you're going to hear is, you know, tire, road
wind noise,
and you're going to hear other cars around you.
Yeah.
It's something that you get used to, you know, when you're driving a lot of electric vehicles. And then I noticed also some of the gasoline cars that we drove, the engines are just so quiet that I started realizing when you're on a highway doing 60 miles an hour or so.
Who goes 60 on the highway, Drew, testing?
I know, you're right.
But, on the Southfield freeway.
Whatever, I'm just saying, at a decent clip, all cars kind of sound the same now. Whether it's an because of wind and road noise, I mean, the engines are barely working at that speed. You know, a gasoline engine's barely running, it seems like. So the NVH seems so finely honed these days that it's...
They've taken out so many other sounds. You hear all the sounds that are a little harder to filter out.
Okay, back to the big V8s, Tom. Yeah. This Hellcat engine, 707 horsepower. I mean, that's just staggering.
It is staggering, and the engineering that they put into this engine—it's astounding, really. It's not just a Hemi with a massive supercharger slapped on it. They did all sorts of work to this, you know, reinforcing the bulkheads in the block and reinforced crankshaft and, you know, super strong alloy pistons and, you know, the stats. They can spew all these interesting stats about this engine. You know, the supercharger at wide open throttle will cram 6,800 gallons of air into the combustion chambers.
I heard that it takes 80
minute.
Horsepower just to run the supercharger.
Just to run the supercharger, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah, it's so... you know, we had a 650 horsepower engine on the list a couple of years ago, the Shelby GT500, great package, and that was kind of my benchmark. That engine is no longer available in the U.S., so it's, you know, it's not in the competition. It was not in the competition this year, so we only had the Hellcat, but our memory took us back to, okay, the only real competitor for this would be the GT500.
Which had 668 horsepower.
660.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
Not 700.
Yeah,
it was not 700. And my recollection was that the GT500 was harder to drive. It was lighter, and you know, straight line acceleration was one thing. Turning onto Woodward from a neighborhood and accelerating was a total. I mean, it was scary. It was hard to keep that thing straight, you know, in a straight line. The Hellcat is so much easier to drive. 700 pounds heavier than the GT500, and you think mass is a bad thing, but in this case, with 707 horsepower, it's a good thing. It keeps you rooted. Two-stage fuel pump in this thing, so
they made a huge effort to make it really civilized. I mean, that's the first thing when somebody asks me, "What did you think of the Hellcat?" That's the first. I tell them, "You won't believe how easy it is to drive, how civilized it is just driving. If you just want to put around town or whatever,
and if you want to crank it up,
scare the
hold on."
That's right. What else besides the Hellcat, performance-wise?
Corvette
LT1.
And you know, on that engine, it's caught some flack before because it's all people say it's a Cayman block engine. It's you know, old school technology or whatever. But when you look into this engine, it's extremely advanced. And here's a case where when you don't have a 4 inches of overhead valves on top, makes the engine very compact, lowers the center of gravity, and really, that makes the whole design of the Corvette possible because the engine's so low and compact due to that, you know, Cayman block architecture. And then, of course, it's loaded with all the new technologies such as direct injection, cylinder deactivation. We got some really good fuel.
22 miles per gallon. 22 miles per gallon, some of us did.
In a Corvette.
And of course, there are those Corvette owners who like to brag about reaching 28, 29 miles per gallon just because they can.
And on a long trip.
On the highway, I've seen 30 mpg.
Heavy, okay.
Yeah, because Top Gear's pretty high, you know. And so here it is, you know, you've got a car that, again, is pretty darn fuel efficient. But also a total beast, but something that, you know, you can actually use as a daily driver and is a flexible car. And that figures a lot in our judging.
Okay, three cylinders, fuel cells, electric, turbo fours, monster V8s. What are we missing?
The only thing that we missed pretty much was the diesel. We had the Ram 15 Eco diesel, the V6. Returning winner. Last year it was on the list. We had three diesels on the list last year. This year, there's only the one. And you know, it's just a phenomenally flexible engine. Fuel economy is the big play there. You know, knowing that you can get 24 miles per gallon in a full size pickup truck, you can do better. You know, on the highway, I'm talking real world. Yeah. In terms of our testing, 24 miles per gallon is not that difficult. It's hard to do that in a full size pickup truck these days. So much weight. You know, Fiat, as part of that partnership with Chrysler, makes this engine available. And there's a price premium. You know, it's a fairly steep price premium. We considered that. We discussed it. But bottom line is 20% of Ram 1500s go out the door with that engine. And you can't ignore that. People know what the price is, and they're paying it.
Yeah, and that made us happy, because last year that engine was really controversial, and a lot of people were really skeptical whether people were going to get a six-cylinder V6 and a light-duty diesel. And there are a lot of skeptics out there. And so after we drove, we said, hey, man, this is really good. We think people are going to buy it. And we were right.
It's always nice to be right.
Yeah.
Christy, final thoughts? Overall wrap up? What's your final quick impression here?
I like our list. It's diverse. I think most people got at least one of their favorites on there.
Yeah.
Of course, we all have some that we're licking our wounds over. I can't wait to see what's ahead next year. We've got some really interesting entrants that we know of, some that we don't know of.
Well, with that, we're going to have to wrap this up. But Drew Winter, Christy Swinesburg, Tom Murphy, thanks so much for coming in and sharing all your findings from Ward's 10 Best.
Thank you.